And if you have not satisfied the requirements, and if the IMF board is not satisfied that you have done everything that is within your power, if it's something that is force majeure and it's not within your power, okay, they'll give you an exemption. But if you have not met those targets, then you are not going to get the next tranche of funds. And
right,
that
Corey,
is the commitment.
Right, caller, come back in, caller. Come.
Okay,
come
right.
In.
Because I'm ecstatic to hear that the central bank governor is now coming across this idea, but I have to say, it almost comes across as 6 years too late. Okay? Now, what I really, I'm forgive me for doing this here, but I have to go back and discuss the aspect of tourism and the statistics and that sort of stuff.
You gotta do it quickly, though, yeah?
Of the statistics, the importance of the statistics that we hear. Okay, there's a weakness, an inherent weakness in statistics. And when I hear some of the things that they're saying, I strongly question. I am strong, I'm behind Wayne in a lot of his comments that he has made, almost 100%, right? But let me give you an example. When you ask a tourist, well, what did you like about your vacation in Barbados or whatever? And they say, oh, what do you find great about Barbados? Say, oh, the friendliness of the people. Okay? And then we go and write a report and says, oh, well, people come to Barbados and they love the aspect of Barbados. They love it because of the friendliness of the people. That's what brings us to Barbados. If you take that question and ask any other country in the Caribbean, okay, and pose that as, what did you like about the country that you visited? They can tell you the exact same thing. So therefore, you have not established something what differentiates a visitor, well, why did they choose Barbados as opposed to choose the other destination? And the thing is, sometimes you have to ask the question of a tourist who has not chosen Barbados as a destination. Now, I worked in tourism industry for almost 30 years. And when I have spoken to tourists, some of the reasons why we have had bumps in our tourist arrival over the years hasn't been so much as to something that we have done that was improved, but because something else happened someplace else. For example, when they had the catastrophe that happened, the tsunami that happened in the southeast, in the far east, or what have you. The following year, we experienced a bump in tourist arrival. And I spoke to some of the tourists that came from that there. And they said, well, our tour, there was the tsunami, and the tour operator then said, well, okay, they're not going to send their people to that region of the world. They'll send them now to Barbados in the Caribbean. They would, and I said, well, did you enjoy it? They said, they would not be coming back to Barbados because the level of service which is offered across there was so much superior to what they were experiencing here in Barbados. And this is on the West Coast that I'm talking about. So therefore, when we say that we don't have, they're total so many issues.
But we got to be careful taking that anecdotal type
experience. No, but just a second, Corey, I'm not just speaking.
No, I understand. I don't want to devalue the point. I just want to put the warning out there. We don't want to hear you on this. No.
Going deeper into the thing, I also work in terms of, when we look in terms of the reason, or the large import bill that we have, and to the degree we say, oh, well, we would like hotels and those sort of stuff to be using more local product and all that sort of stuff. But some of the reasons why the hotels use the outside companies, one, in terms of supply, and also for credit facilities. So therefore, you have a situation where you could pick up a phone and you could call a supplier overseas and tell them, listen, you want a container of XYZ to come down at XYZ time, and I will pay you in 60 days, 90 days, or whatever. And that man says, no problem, puts it on the ship, and it comes down. So you have now budgeted and planned according to how you can pay back in terms of credit and stuff like that. When you have to deal with local creditors who are far smaller, in a lot of cases, they cannot carry that level of credit demand. So therefore, you have situations where you have that high import bill because, and so therefore, if you have increased numbers.
Whereas I agree with you, caller, there's something I want to stick in here. But Barbados, the government of Barbados, right, is the biggest creditor to most businesses. When they talk about privatizing the private sector, and you know when you got to wait for money from government, you know what happens? They got to wait, and the wait was 60 days, 90 days, and much longer. So I take your point, because I know you. I take your point. But still consider that on the other end. I can ask for excuse now. Don't send me the long emails, boy, cut you off. I just have to move on because of time. Okay? Thank you. Let's take another call quickly. Brad Starts, good afternoon.
Hello.
Hey, good afternoon. You're on.
Right, this is Bram. Solutions for Arbeta.
Yes, sir.
Right. Now, I would agree in terms of going to the IMF back in 2008 when Barbadians still had savings, and therefore the harsh IMF measures, there was a buffer with those savings. But be recommending that we go to the IMF now, after a lot of people's savings have been wiped out, when there is a non-austerity plan on the table, is unconscionable. So I hear the recommendations to go to the IMF. Why don't they at least look at the non-austerity, non-IMF verified method, rather than keep pushing this IMF thing all the time? I asked ready for a joint committee of the Barbados Economic Society and the Institute of Chartered Accountants of Barbados to just evaluate everyone's plan. And if some are saying that they don't need to go to the IMF, well, just go and investigate. Is that true?
Wait, before you go any further,
because
Paul,
what happened was that some said that they are going to the IMF. I think Reinstron said that that's a good part of the plan, and Bruce Tennis with the UPP. And then when they got the little pushback, and Pearsons were not happy with it because the economists were saying, that's very good, that's very responsible, that's very mature to say that that's what you're going to do in this political environment. But then they got scared and they ran away from it. But there needs to be some group that can actually, a non-political group, a non-partisan group, that can look at the plans of all parties and say, this is workable and this is not workable. Anyone can promise someone a space shuttle, but someone needs to look at the plan and say that you can't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my great concern. So we have Wirral and others there. Why not just form a little committee and look at the plans and start talking about IMF or IMF when there is a non-IMF option? I said it's unconscionable to be talking about IMF when there's when we don't need to go through that harsh pain. Unconscionable.
Okay, caller, I think part of the IMF recommendation, or a big part of it, is really to secure the financing from the IMF. The IMF themselves do not have any, you know, magic bullet or any secret that they can come and bring to solve the problem. I think the idea is that the government, whichever one it is, comes up with a plan that says, this is how we're going to reduce the government's, the level of the fiscal deficit, and this is how we're going to get the debt on a downward trajectory. The challenge is, though, having come up with that plan, you still need some financing, because that plan is you're gonna have to implement it over a period of time. And
yep.
Having implemented it over a period of time, though, you're gonna have to hope that you don't run out of reserves before. So what the IMF provides is the foreign exchange in the interim to allow you to carry out those plans. And that plan that you have developed and brought to the IMF can then be evaluated every quarter, as Dr. Rose said. And that allows you to trigger the next tranche of funds that is available to you. Now,
and I agree. I agree that we should go, if it is that we have no plan at all, or our plans are weak, or we just don't have the funds, then let's go to the IMF. But we don't have the funds. We can't afford to.
But Grenville,
back.
I would need you to tell the public.
If we have it, though,
as a potential next Minister of Finance in Barbados, right? I would need for you to tell Barbados what is. Pardon me?
No, well, it won't be me. We have someone else.
Prime Minister.
Who has 26 years of accounting experience. It'll be her.
I need for you to tell Barbados an outline in a nutshell. What would be this non-IMF plan? Because you are what is known on the other side of many economists know. And this is a seismic shift for me in Barbados in terms of saying go to the IMF. It's not something that I heard growing up. The IMF was like a boogeyman. A political boogeyman, an economic boogeyman, a national boogeyman. Now you have, I have three economists in here, three different generations, and all three are saying, let's go to the IMF under these particular conditions. You are saying there's a non-IMF program, an option. Could you give that to the Barbadian listeners in a nutshell, please?
Right, I'll try and do that. Just let me say, though, that I said going to the IMF would have been a reasonable option back in 2009.
We heard all of that. Oh, no. We heard all of that.
Right. Okay, I just want to make sure that's good. Clear. So I'm not against the IMF. I'm not against the IMF. I'm just saying that we don't need it now when there's a non-IMF option. Now, here's the plan. It's basically four simple steps. And again, I would really like, if I could just share the numbers, y'all can just go over the numbers and say, yes, I've seen the numbers, and the numbers make sense, which we've already done. So, first, we plan to reduce taxes down to 10% across the board. Taxes for businesses, they're on gross revenues, not on profit. Persons earning foreign currency, those are taxed at zero. That's the first bank, the taxation. Second one is management. Every government service, every government department, including the central bank, will be managed in accordance with the ISO 9001 quality management system. This is the international quality management system, a customer-focused system. It's tried in countries around the world, and it works. Our big problem is management. Even in this paper, I see Mr. Kopp and Courtney just talking about the problem is management. The whole is management, and yet we are ignoring the international customer-focused management standard. It's not a Barbadian standard, it's not a Caribbean, it's an international standard, and it works. So that's the second thing. Therefore, we're not going to be complaining about potholes in the roads, they'll be fixed. We're not going to be complaining about sewage in the streets, they'll be fixed. Because we're managing
the point that Shane was making is that you need the funding still to fix them. Where's the money coming from? Shane was saying that even though you do all these things, management, drop taxes, all that, you still need financing to do certain things. Where's the financing in your plan coming from?
Yes, that's what you want to share with you all the numbers, because we now have proved that when you reduce taxes, you take in more revenues. We plan to reduce taxes across the board. I advise this even David Thompson, even to school with him. I said, please, just reduce taxes. Trust us. But he decided that he would raise taxes instead, and they kept raising them every cent. So the third thing then is corruption. We have to deal with corruption because corruption is a serious matter. If you Google corruption and the construction industry, you'll find that between 10 and 30% of a construction project is corruption, like a bribe. Worldwide, between 10 and 30% is massive. In some countries, it's documented that 50%, half. So you go to the bank, you borrow $100 million. You build a $50 million asset, and the other $50 million gets spread around. Who pays for that? The taxpayer. That's why you have to go and pay a lot of taxes to pay back a lot of these bribery loans.
All right, Grenville, let's take a pain.
Corruption in the most effective manner. The most effective manner. And the last thing then is depoliticizing the civil service. So that you're promoted on merit alone.
All right, let's get some. You said you wanted a little panel to assess the plans. We have one here live on the ear. Let's get some reaction to the plan.
I need to share the numbers with them. I need to share the numbers.
Oh, go ahead, quickly. Numbers. Go ahead.
Yes, that's what I said. So if it can just get together and let's come and look at the numbers, and then that would help so much.
Okay. All right, let's hear some reaction to the plan. Is it workable? Is it not workable? Is this a space shuttle that cannot be created? Let's start, economists. Grenville, just hold a minute. Remember, you a couple of weeks ago, you said you're not a gully boy. And now you're developing, I don't know if it's rubbing off on you, the gully boyism. So just hold on a minute, please.
Sorry about that.
Please. Economists in the room, and not economists.
The point I want to make is that Mr. Phillips said that if you reduce the taxes, you can get more revenue. Well, there are two things on that. The NSRL has gone up and revenues have gone up, not as much as the government would have liked because imports have gone down, but the revenues have gone up. So on the flip side, if you reduce the NSRL, then you might in the interim have a reduction in revenues. Having said that, let's assume that you do see an increase in revenues if you reduce your taxes to 10%. The only way that can happen is if people spend more, because the volume of spending needs to increase to compensate for the fact that you have a lower tax rate. If the volume of spending increases and it goes to imports, it means you push the foreign exchange reserves even further down. So the plan needs to then have something that compensates for the additional demand on the foreign exchange. And I think that is where the IMF comes in. So like I said, we can.
All right,
we
pause
can
a minute. Granville, any quick response to that?
Right, well, I'm not talking about the NSRL. I said we plan to give Owen Arthur a knighthood because it proves that when you reduce
tax. All right, we talk about Owen Arthur later. Talking about the foreign exchange, the in terms of the spending and the imports and so on. What is your response to that? Did you think that through?
That's what I said. Foreign currency earnings are taxed at zero. So therefore, that's how you'll get our foreign currency earnings. We get our local currency earnings because we're reducing taxes to 10%. Right. We'll have enough, and most of our bills are in local currency. But we also have bills in foreign currency. And therefore, that's what I said. We need a very low tax rate to bring those back to Barbados as opposed to competing with the Lucia at 2.5% and 1.5%. We make ours zero.
Very quickly. Just a minute. I want to get back and forth so that the public gets a real time understanding what's happening here.
Yeah, Mr. Phillips, I actually noted all the points that you put for your plan that would steer us away from the IMF. When I look at the components, this is more to affect the deficit because they're talking about issues of domestic taxes and so on and so on. But the issue that with the IMF is an external thing, dealing with the balance of payment situation. Your model doesn't address that. And that's where you would need the IMF. The IMF is not, we are not concerned so much about the taxation levels on the domestic side. To the extent that, as Shane said, if they're low enough, they could drive enough imports that would reduce the foreign exchange and foreign reserves, then we still got to go back to the IMF for foreign exchange balance payment support. So I think your model needs to look at that issue in terms of the balance of payment side of it, which is dealing with foreign exchange flows and the...
Yeah.
But your model doesn't speak to that.
But it does. That's what
where?
You said.
I mean, it's 0% tax, but
0% tax on foreign currency earnings. Now, this is the thing. This, but one thing, just me, a brief few seconds here. We gave all the numbers, including the balance of payments, everything, to a fellow of the Institute of Chartered Accountants of Barbados, and we said, have no mercy on it. We also gave it to economists and accountants, and said, have no mercy whatsoever on it. And we got a report coming back that said, in 1 year, we clear the deficit, not the debt. We clear the deficit in 1 year, we go back to investment grade. In 1 year. And in that year, we abolish VAT. Because we can't do it. I would like to share the numbers with you. Don't just keep saying, no, it's not going to work. Why not look at the numbers and then determine that?
No,
I said, it's irresponsible to be talking about going to the IMF with all the harsh austerity when there's a non-austerity plan on the table.
All right, Dr. Will.
Yes. I've said often that the economy of Barbados is like an engine that runs on foreign exchange. The reality is that our main source of foreign exchange at the moment is tourism. And there is nothing that government can do in the short run to increase the amount of foreign exchange that we are earning from tourism.
I agree.
With the circumstances of the fact that the administrative inefficiency that we have at the moment with the threat to the Barbados dollar, we are not getting foreign direct investment. The investors are holding off. So we're not getting foreign exchange from that perspective. And the government, its credit rating is so low that they cannot borrow. So the amount of foreign exchange that is available is not going to increase at the moment. The spending at the moment is exceeding the availability of foreign exchange because the government still has a deficit on its operations. That deficit, the central bank is providing Barbados dollars to cover that deficit so that people can get paid. Those Barbados dollars, when people spend them, the people that they spend it on, when they restock and so on, they need foreign exchange. That foreign exchange is diminishing the stock of the reserves as we speak in real time.
Agreed.
That stock has gone down over since 2013 to the end of last year by 1 billion Barbados dollars. That is the that is the existential threat to our the value of our money. We have to have a plan that addresses it. And the only plan, Renville, I'm sorry, the only plan that addresses that is my plan. That's the only one.
All right, we can agree to disagree on that. I know Kenny McDonald, he is on the line. He wants to get a specific answer to the objective measurement of productivity within the public sector. So let's see if we can just quickly take that call. So let's switch over. Thank you, Mr. Grenville Phillips. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm not McDonald.
Okay. And you never had a farm. Go ahead.
So I am still on.
Yes, you go ahead. You go ahead. You go ahead.
We at the Caribbean Wax Museum represent a couple of people who actually believe that Barbados can produce something that the rest of the world is prepared to buy. That is a model, a progression, a model in development that I think has been ignored by all of the academics at that table and indeed involved with the political parties. They still see us as being services, and that's how we will be represented across the globe. So investment, foreign investment and investment in hotels and stuff, investment in holes in the ground, which is a bit insulting. But it does not do our cause any good, because we do represent a type of activity that people not only are prepared to buy, but are prepared to pay to go through the door just to witness. And they come from as far as Argentina, from the Dutch countries and so on, in the Caribbean. We are the only ones, us and the people in Cuba, that have been able to do this. Now, I'm saying this in public because I need to have these guys understand who speak in public about ways that we can go forward. You're prepared to speak about investment in retail operations, and they are selling foreign goods, even though it albeit to foreigners. You speak about the hole in the ground, which is actually a very sophisticated hole in the ground, but it still recognizes that there's a need for equipment that is bought from overseas in order to get this thing to be explored and to be a viable attraction. And the submarine is still an important type of technology, still an important expertise. But right here, right now, we have local expertise that can be sold as a tangible everywhere else in the world. We are the Caribbean Wax Museum. We get absolutely no support from the government, the people of Barbados, but it would be nice to get a little mention from time and again from those who recognize that things like what we do are important.
In terms of selling creativity and selling in terms of manufacturing and so on, that's something that when we talk about economics in these times, I don't hear any discussion really about anymore. Is that a dead industry? Is it, where are we going with that? The manufacturing in particular. Creating. Quickly.
Okay. I would want to agree with the caller this way in terms of the focus not being, to move the focus away from services and look at what we can do in terms of industry, manufacturing, technology, and so on. I think that that's the way the future has to go anyway. There's a problem I find with the tourism sector, if I could go back to that quickly, is that the resource requirements in tourism tend to be too low skill. You know, for us to go forward as a country, we have to develop higher level skills. But at the same time, we have to have investments in technology, manufacturing, and the like. The call is still online?
No.
So, because I wanted to ask him the level of exports or whatever of the Wax Museum businessman.
I don't think it's export. I think in terms of bringing people in
as a tourism attraction.
I think we can have a talk about that. Let's get in this last one here. Good afternoon and welcome.
Hi, good afternoon, Corey.
Hi, good afternoon.
Am I?
Yes, you're on the air. You're on the air. Go right ahead.
Okay, so good afternoon to you again and to your panel. Yeah, very quickly, because I read that the program is about to end. I first wanted to ask the central bank governor what objective method he would propose to measure productivity in public service. And the reason I'm asking that question, Corey, is because a lot of the time I think he is mixing up systemic measures or systemic problems within the public service and workers actually producing. So there are two different things that you have to distinguish. You either have to look at the structure of the public service, or you have to look at the workers within it. I do not believe that the workers within the public service are underproducing. I do believe that they produce at a very high level, and I can give examples of that. But I think the central bank governor usually refers to systemic problems within the public service when he speaks about inefficiencies within the public service. So my question to the central bank governor very quickly, and there are a number of things, if I can just, you want me to speak one time or do you want
no,
me
to I want to get a response from him in case the producer put the axe on me. So we have the president of the National Union of Public Workers, Kenny McDonald, on the line.
Hi, Kenny Delisle. Listen, I think you've put the your I'm glad you raised that question, because you know I'm very conscious that people interpret my comments as saying that the public sector workers are shiftless and lazy and so on. That is not the case. As I say, you know, the problem is that you have too many of them. Right? And many of them are not in the right places. Many of them don't have the appropriate skills. And there are some that are lazy and shiftless. Okay? So the problem is that because you're when you come to make that wages bill every month, you have to pay so many people. The people that are good, the people that you would like to promote, the people that you would like to pay because they are productive, you can't. You see, so you're creating problems, and you have, and you're quite right that the problem is not an individual problem; it's an organizational problem. It is, you know,
right.
So that's why it's a structural problem. It is that people who have, valuable contributions to make, can't find a way to do it, who are frustrated within the system. So, you know, I think it is, you know, we have a system that is unfair to public servants, to conscientious public servants who want to make. So, we, you know, and you know, you can only spend a dollar if you have a dollar. So you cannot spend $120 if you only have taxes of $100. So that's the first problem you have got to fix. Now, in answer to your question, as to how you measure productivity, that is beyond my expertise. But what I am saying is that we should not do separations in the way that we have done them in the past, where they're susceptible to bias, to accusations of bias, favoritism, and so on. That we must do it, we must bring in the expertise who are going to do things in a technically competent and transparent measure. So that you can, so that at the end of the day, you know, you can stand up, the people who are going to be managing this thing can stand up in front of any audience and say, this is why we have done what we have done, and they can be defended and in any court.
All right, I think that we got to end it there. We've really been, the producer has been very gracious and linked us some time. So just want to get some quick closing comments. So let's go down the generations, as they call them. Mm-hmm. Young, younger, youngest.
All right.
So we start with Shane and finish with you.
Okay. So I think ultimately we have a challenge, and we have immediate challenges, we have medium-term challenges. In the medium term, yes, we want to get more out of tourism. Yes, we want to get more out of the cultural industries and international business, etc. The challenge is that in the immediate term, those things are not going to take us out of the situation. We cannot find $250 million overnight from tourism or $250 million from international business in a year, which is the current gap we have to try to close. So that is where the IMF and additional funds come in to give us the time to make progress on those other sectors. The IMF doesn't necessarily have to be a boogeyman to say they will divide the dollar. That isn't necessarily their mandate, but certainly they will provide some oversight that will aid us in trying to improve the confidence in the public sector and in the country as a whole as an investment destination.
I would agree with Shane across the board in that unless the Foreign Reserve situation improves, which I can't imagine it would do in the next couple of months, we have no choice in the short run to look at the IMF program and engage it. That's a given. But in the medium to long term, I think that we have to seriously look at restructuring and look seriously at engaging the private sector to drive more export-based activities and products and services.
Right. So you know, because we are, we have in Barbados a secure democracy, each one of us is now in a position to take action to protect the value of our dollar. As I've explained, in order to arrest the drain of foreign reserves, government has to reduce operating expenses and balance current revenues and current spending. If anyone is unclear, is still unclear as to why this is so, please visit my website, thedialworld.com, and read or listen to my April economic letter. I want to thank you very much, Corey, for giving me this opportunity to exercise my responsibility to the public of Barbados, which is to explain the economic process of cause and effect. The rest is up to us all.
Well said, well put, and a good place to, and I want to thank you gentlemen, of course, Dr. Dilawarl, Mr. Wayne Lovell, and Mr. Shane Lowe, of course, the producer, and all you who would have listened and contributed to make the program what it has been. I finally got hold of the information in relation to the tax, and it is acting commissioner, Revenue Commissioner Wayne Ford, but we're going to talk about that later in terms of taxes, renewable energy, and imports. We got 17 items for the next budget. So any leader, any political party could check me. I got the paper right here. So I want to thank everybody. I want you to enjoy the remainder of your Sunday evening. And I want to thank, finally, Williams Industries Incorporated for making this happen.
You do not have to be a roofing expert to know that a metal sheet will rust where it is joined. That is one reason why the beautiful Permaclad U-Panel and R-Panel roof sheet sold at Williams Metals will outlast other roofing materials. Permaclad, colorclad, and corrugated sheets are cut to the exact length that you will need, up to 40 feet and even longer. That means no joins from ridge to eave. Colorclad sheets come with a factory painted finish in white, blue, green, red, brown, and yellow, and are fitted with screws for added resistance, tested to withstand high winds up to 130 miles an hour. Get a rail roof supplied at competitive prices, delivered to you today from Williams Metals. Simply call Williams at Kane Garden St. Thomas 425-2000 or Lowlands Christ Church 428-1500.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.